there. Welcome to Mental Illness Life. I am Brooke. And yes, you read that title correctly. And I'm hoping that you can, you know, leave space for an open mind with this and understand that I'm not trying to go for shock value. Like, I literally get dick pics and am technically dating a daddy dom right now. So that being said, this is the one. This is the one about having mental illness and dating and sex and relationships and insecurity and ghosting and all of the bullshit, because man, am I in it right now. So I want to sort of start out, well, of course, let me recap for those of you maybe just starting to listen, or you saw this title or you saw the ad or whatever. You know, I'd love for you to go back to the beginning of the podcast episodes and start there. But if you are just now listening, I am a 43-year-old adult living with mental illness. I have lived successfully with mental illness for most of my adult life. I have been diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder, bipolar 1 disorder, anxiety, and adjustment disorders. So really all the disorders. And I'm extremely open about my journey and my struggles and all of that. And what I have set out to do is really bring this idea of self-awareness that, you know, only comes by saying your shit and telling your story. And I'm telling my story right now. So I don't know necessarily who locally and like those people that know me personally actually listen to this podcast. I have a feeling that it's quite a few of you and you just don't really reach out, because why would you? It's totally fine. But what I found is that a lot of people are really curious about my relationship status, you know, seeing me on social media, and, you know, even men that hit you up on Facebook and different, you know, platforms that you didn't really realize that was being used as a dating app. But what do you know? Again, I can't talk to you guys about being self-aware and saying your shit when there's anything in my life that I'm not willing to talk about. So this has taken me a while to get to, even, you know, with all of the other episodes, this is the one that has taken me a while to decide that it's time to talk about, because I feel like there's a lot to learn. You know, there's this sort of second side to my life, which definitely bleeds together with the mental illness living, and that's the business side of things. And I listen to a lot of business gurus and entrepreneurs that, you know, put out content, and one of my favorites and one of the ones that I really follow religiously is Gary Vaynerchuk. And if you don't know who that is, look it up. And he really talks a lot about self-awareness, especially in the business world, obviously, and how a lot of this stuff can really, you know, mess with you. And lately he's been sort of concerned that, you know, all people do is listen to him and they don't necessarily go out and do. And I think that's the same type of thing as this. You know, yes, hear my story and, you know, take from what I'm telling you, but you have to go live your life. You have to go make mistakes. You have to go get hurt. You got to be ghosted once in a while. Like, you've got to deal with all this stuff. You can't really listen to this podcast and then, you know, go, I'm going to learn from what she did. Because I'll tell you what, I think most of you are like me. You can't fucking tell me anything. Like, I'm not going to learn from somebody else's mistakes. It's just all there is to it. I am only going to learn from my own mistakes. And I've made a really big one, and it has affected me, and I've decided, like, no more. Yeah, I'm getting emotional. I'm tired, and I'm, like, spread too thin lately, and I don't fucking care right now that you hear this emotion in my voice, because I've told you guys before, there's not enough lithium on the fucking planet that stops this type of thing from happening. There are definitely, like, when I talk to you about medications and therapies, when I was misdiagnosed and I was put on the wrong medication, it creates a zombie effect and you don't feel who you are. And a lot of this that has happened in the last couple of weeks with my relationship status is something that is just what everybody goes through. And I've had, you know, I've seen my therapist and my psychiatrist, and we've kind of decided, like, this is just normal human emotion, human adult, you know, emotion that comes along with a breakup, comes along with a, you know, adjustment of some kind. This is when that adjustment disorder comes in. And, you know, I haven't talked a ton about that because it comes and goes. It's something I don't live successfully with. And that's the exception to the rule, is having adjustment disorder means that when something bad happens, like a divorce or loss of job, it's not a depression. You literally become stuck. Last year, a year and a half ago, when a very lucrative contract ended for me, and it ended poorly on both sides, I just didn't work for 2 months. You know, I was very blessed to be able to just use savings, which is now gone. But, you know, I don't think I could have functioned any other way, you know, other than that. So I have been living with a guy. Let me back up. 3 years ago, I got divorced from my best friend, and he and I had been together even in a friendship capacity for close to 10 years. And we got married 2 years before we got divorced, and it was very difficult. And I will never get into that story because I don't think it's pertinent. So just know that it really wasn't the relationship between he and I. It was extenuating circumstances that we just couldn't work out. So that I didn't adjust to very well. And I remember, like, I lost a bunch of weight. I've always really yo-yoed with my weight. I'm going to get into that in a little bit because I was just a guest on my friend's podcast called The Body Story Podcast, which is going to come out, I think, in 2 weeks. So you got to watch for that. It'll be on my social media page. And, like, I've always been very attractive. I'm still, and I have these kind of delusions of grandeur that I'm just hot as fuck. And, you know, I do get attention from men, but the fact is I am 35 pounds overweight and I'm super aware of it. So after the divorce, I lost a bunch of weight. I looked amazing. And, you know, I did the Tinder thing. I did the online dating thing, and I met my current situation. Pretty quickly, we fell into lust. And it was, when I look back, it was so classic fixer-esque. Okay, so, like, I'm a fixer, and I always have been. Even my ex-husband and relationships before that, I am a fixer and an empath. I don't like using that because, like, I think it means something different to everybody, but I want to read definitions of that, and then you can decide for yourself. But what happened was, I was kind of in this weird living situation limbo, and my son was up at his dad's for like 2 months because it was summertime. So the relationship with this new guy became very hot and heavy, and he was, you know, so charming, still so charming. Everything I was attracted to, tall, fully tattooed, just charming as fuck, and had me hooked right then. But the problem was, he was dating other girls. He was kind of like, that's his MO, was kind of getting girls to do what he wanted. But he made me feel like I was the one that he didn't, you know, need to manipulate, and that I was the one he was really, truly in love with. And I mean, it was fast. A month later, I was living in his apartment, and then we were finding a place. So we moved in together 2 months after meeting. And I remember a month into it, because there's definitely some alcohol issues. There's definitely some stuff that I wasn't really prepared for, because how did I know this guy? I didn't fucking know him 2 months into it. Come on. He had some, like, issues with his impending divorce. I just wanted to fix it. I just wanted to fix everything. This is how my life goes. I don't know how it pertains. I try to deal with that in therapy. Like, why am I such a fixer if my trauma was that I wasn't loved? Like, if my trauma was as a kid and, you know, all of that kind of stuff, why am I a fixer now? Well, you could, you know, therapize all day long and still not really come up with an answer. You just have to deal with it now. And so about a year in, he got so drunk, he brought a girl home. Now, if you've heard my chronic paranoid insecurity episode, you'll know that that is my go-to insane paranoia insecurity. I mean, it literally, like, I was in the bedroom and I heard something later at night. And I, over the course of the next 2 hours, I went in there. He was so drunk. There was a girl in the bed with him in the guest room. It was legit like the worst. It was just a mess, absolute mess. And, you know, kicked her out. And that was close to a year ago. A year. He still lives here in my house. And over that year, I took him back. And then, you know, we tried to make it work. He was obviously drunk. I'm sure he was blacked out at the time, which in itself is a problem. You know, like, it wasn't the fact that he brought a girl home. It was the fact that he allowed himself to get that drunk. It was, and then, you know, people, if you drink too much and then use that as an excuse for all the shit that you do, you know, fuck that. It's not the alcohol. It's you. You making those decisions. It was just like, you know, back in the day when I made the decision to do all those drugs, I did that to myself. I made those decisions and then I had to take responsibility for the, you know, consequences or the reactions. So over the last year, what I've done is lied to myself thinking, well, I don't have to go date because dating fucking sucks, right? It sucks. That's where the name of this episode came from, because I can't tell you how many dick pics I've gotten. And I'm not even going to get into that whole thing because I'm not going to even give it energy. But like, guys, why are you sending dick pics? Like, we probably would end up in bed with you at some point. But when you send a dick pic, I'll tell you what, the only girls that really want that, and I've gotten into arguments about this over the last like week, because guys seriously think that girls want to see those dick pics. And I am telling you that the only reason why they would even do that is because they're so insecure, they want you to like them. So they make it seem like they want that, but it's the ugliest body part on your body. No one needs to see that. Okay, back to this whole idea that I've been trying to get him out of the house. You know, thankfully he lives on the other side of the house. It's big enough where the master suite on one side is where I live. And then there's two other bedrooms on the other side. I'm actually using my hand to point as if you can see it. And that's where one bedroom is my son's and the other bedroom is his space now. So a lot of people have been, you know, all up in my grill, like, you got to move him out. You got to get him out of there. And, you know, every couple of weeks we'd go back and forth with this sort of comfort. And then we were still having sex. We were still kind of providing comfort for each other, even though we knew it wasn't going to work long term. He was looking for a place, you know, by himself. He jumped into this relationship way too soon as well. So eventually got to the point where he realized he needs to have his own place. You know, he jumped from one thing to the next. So that, you know, was understandable. And it was difficult to handle at the time, you know, a year ago when he, you know, wanted to move out. It's not easy to evict someone. I don't care what you say. It is not easy to evict someone. You've all heard those stories about like squatters in people's houses. That's what he's doing. He's squatting. So I've done so much to like figure this out. So it got to the point where I was lying to myself and saying, well, I don't really need to date because I've got somebody at home. Like, this is subconsciously what I'm saying to myself, right? That I at least have this sort of comfort. He wasn't somebody that I brought places or, you know, was like there with my friends. I would go out to dinner with him. We'd have sex sometimes. There was a comfort level. We were friends. It became this idea that we were kind of still in a relationship. And the negativity, I'm not trying to throw him under the bus, you guys, but he was an energy sucker. And that's what that whole empath thing is. And 2 weeks ago, I just had it. So a couple of weeks ago, I was talking to my friend and I was telling her how, and I've, you know, discussed this with my therapist and lots of people, that I didn't want to date outside of this because I didn't want to hurt his feelings and I didn't want him to be upset because he still really cared about me. And so I just never really, you know, went down that road. I've, of course, been, you know, approached by men. I did try the Tinder thing again, even while he's living here, even while we were having these, you know, this sexual relationship. But I just, like, I always felt guilty. So I'm telling my friend this. And so, you know, I'm super open about this stuff publicly. But if you think about it privately with the girlfriends who know me at that level, I'm, you know, even more open about it. So people just, they know my shit. That's for sure. And I'm telling her about, you know, the situation. Well, I haven't really dated anybody, but I know this isn't the right thing for me. So you know, I feel stuck. I feel like my life can't start until he's out. And I've heard this before, just in different context, but it just struck me coming from her that, you know, she said, you know, Brooke, it's like you're drowning, but you're constantly giving him the life preserver because you don't want him to be hurt. You want him to be okay. You don't want this to be uncomfortable for him and you don't want him to drown. And it hit me like a ton of bricks. And 2 days later, he did something, stayed out all night, does that a lot, you know, blames it on getting drunk and, you know, not wanting to drive. So how responsible that is to just crash on someone's couch. And we all know that's a bunch of bullshit and he's sleeping with a girl. So, and this has happened numerous times over the last year. And I just wrote it off like, well, we're not together. And technically I could be doing the same thing, but I just don't have the desire to do that. So I just confronted him and said, look, I'm going to start dating. I don't want anything to do with you. I really need you to get out. And I just decided the only thing I can do at this point is make it as uncomfortable as possible for him. And that's what I set out to do. Well, that fucking backfired because he's now met someone and he's been at that girl's house every night since. And this is the longest drawn out breakup of my fucking life. And I don't know what I did in a past life to deserve this, but every other day I have to see him come home, do laundry, and then leave again to go to his new girlfriend's house. It should be a clean break. It should just be done. And it's not. I have to see this person that I, you know, still care about. It's just that, you know, the relationship won't work. But now I'm thinking to myself, well, shit, it's working with this other girl. And what the hell's wrong with me that he couldn't make it work with me? And it just swirls around in my head. And I'm, you know, before it was like, I felt at least some comfort knowing he was here in the other room and like at night. And when he started going to this girl's house every, like literally every day, I'm here at the house alone when my son is at his dad's. And it's incredibly lonely, incredibly lonely. And I didn't adjust well to it. I'm still not really adjusting well to it. And that's kind of where all this starts after 20 minutes of talking about this one particular situation. But, you know, it's consuming me that what a mind fuck this is, that I don't want to be with this guy. I don't want anything to do with him, but I have to experience him being in a great relationship with this new person and probably having that same rush of lust and, you know, the new relationship feel. And I'm sort of stuck over here getting dick pics from guys and realizing that one of the guys that I've started dating is a daddy dom, which in itself is not that bad. And I'm going to talk to you about this. This episode, you guys, is going to be a long one. It's also one of those that I'm going to sort of tell you some stories and read a couple of things because I just feel like there's a few other people that say it better than me. So we're going to get into it. This one particular situation about my body, right? This is another mind fuck. When I come and tell you about this type of thing, I need you to have an open mind. You guys, if you've been listening to me, you've gotten to know me, you know that I'm super open about everything. And so that's going to be the same with this. If this is the first time you're hearing this, you're going to think that I'm an egotistical maniac. And that's fine too, because it probably is. But we've all got our shit, right? And if you've got your shit and you want to say it, great. But don't get mad at me for saying these things when, you may have some sort of judgment against it. So I've always been very beautiful, tall, blonde. You know, as a kid, my mother hated that part of things, so she would cut off all my hair. And so, like, later in life, I've always gotten attention from men. I'm very, you know, curvy and in all the right places, if you will. But my weight has fluctuated so much that when I am heavier, I still see myself as this thin model-esque, you know, look. And then I see pictures and go, oh my God, I have gained so much weight. Like this, it's not attractive. And the last like couple of months, because I have all these speaking engagements coming up, I've started freaking out. Like I'm going to be recorded and I'm going to be, you know, all these things. So I've been working out with a trainer and I feel good. That's the whole idea. And the problem with all of this is because we are so focused right now on body positivity, and that's amazing. And we should. And this is, you know, everyone's like, you're so confident. You walk into a room and you just own the room. And I think to myself in my head, that's because I have this like delusion of grandeur that I'm just still hot as fuck. Because in my early 20s, I modeled and I worked at this club that like, it was all tiny skirts and bustiers. And I feel like sometimes I'm still that girl, and I'm not. So that's been difficult, because let me tell you, the struggle is real when you're on, you're doing these like online, you know, app dating bullshit, and you see a picture and then you show up and that person doesn't look a fucking thing like their picture. I realized that that could be me essentially, because from the neck up, or I guess the chest up, I look like the rest of me probably is thin, and not thin, but you know, in a good spot. And that's not the case. I've gained weight in my midsection and my thighs. And so I definitely, it looks a little different in person than it does on pictures. I think people too can be really caught off guard with my eyes and my face and, you know, and the hair and the eyelashes. I get eyelash extensions. It makes me feel very confident. I love it. My hair's grown out. And so, like I said, there's been, I still get a lot of attention from men, but I get sexual attention from men in the sense of they're not super interested in getting to know me. And I am a lot to handle. I have a huge personality. One of the guys said, you know, you're really sharp and nobody's going to get a bunch of horse shit past you. And I'm like, first of all, that in itself is kind of crazy, because are you guys trying to get horse shit past women? I don't know. Thank you that I'm so sharp that no one's going to get horse shit past me. Again, just messing with my head. Then the ghosting situation, you start to talk to a guy and or a person. This happens with girls too. You start talking to a girl and the next thing you know, you've got a great, you know, texting thing going on, and then you don't hear from them. Or you go out a couple times, maybe you have sex with them, and then you never hear from them again. It is a mind fuck. I just saw actually a trailer for a new MTV show about ghosting. It's going to be awesome. Well, I don't know if it's going to be awesome, but I'm totally going to watch it and see, because we've all been there where we want to confront the ghosting person and say, what the fuck? So that's a super fun part of dating. And to go back to the situation at my home is like, I'm almost jealous of the fact that he's found somebody so quickly that he's comfortable with to be able to go, you know, every day to this person's house. And I'm stuck here lonely as fuck. And the only guys that are paying attention to me are the ones that want to, you know, do me, which is also fine. I've got to reiterate that, like, you know, just having sex is perfectly fine. And we need to be open about the fact that we are sexual beings. And if you want to just go and have one night stands and hookups, you know, please be safe. But that's your prerogative. There's nothing wrong with it. Guys or girls, nothing wrong with it. And to be honest, you know, I'm not mad at you guys for sending dick pics. I'm just saying you're defeating the purpose, because you can't really put it in someone if you send it to them first over an image and they're like, gross, gross. Okay. Just no. Oh, okay. Let's get to the idea of being a fixer. Okay. There's this idea like, okay, so I grew up in the 90s, 80s and 90s. And, you know, back then you couldn't just like Google a personality trait and then, you know, spend 12 hours reading about it, clicking links, and eventually concluding that you suffer from some rare ailment that you can only contract in like the Amazon forest or some shit. Like, it just didn't work that way. So the point is, I never had like some way of identifying this component of my personality, this fixer trait, which is, you know, a compulsion to fix things. And I've told you before, like in my profession, I'm a computer programmer. Literally, I fix things all day long. That is what I do. And you can probably, I know you guys can hear me on this, like in high school or college or wherever, like you are the person that people confide in when they struggle in relationships. I used to think to myself, my friends tell me things like in my delusional brain that people, like I'll go and have lunch with people and, you know, it's constantly apparent to me that people are super comfortable and they'll tell me anything. And I was like, you know, oh my God, it's such a great trait. I'm such a good listener. Yeah, fuck that. It's because I'm a fixer. People are drawn to me because they need fixing. I was thinking like my friends tell me things that they'd never tell anyone else because I'm so trustworthy. And like, you know, as an adult, you're drawn to potential partners that clearly face emotional challenges that seem daunting and you want to fix. This is my life. Even my ex-husband, like this is my life. You're drawn to that because those people are drawn to you and you feel needed. I've always wanted to just feel needed. I never had like the parental, you know, relationship where they needed me to be in their life. And so I created that for myself. And I guarantee a lot of you are like this, and I'm not going to try to tell you why. You and I are just fixers. There's a ton of like shit out there on the subject and definitely talented men and women with grad school degrees that are way better equipped to tell you like what journey you're on, right? Like go see your therapist. Like in my case, the cost of being a fixer far outweighs the benefits. Not that I really think there are any fucking benefits to it. Okay, you guys, so bear with me. I'm going to read this cool article. I love this. I really like telling you guys stories about my life and what's happening. And I am going to go further into this possibly down the road about, you know, the dating situation and getting really specific with that, because I think it does help to know that it's out there. But you know what? I'm not telling you to like, you know, learn from my mistakes. You've got to go and date and get ghosted and all of those things. So this article is called Don't Go Exhausted, Trying to Fix It All, Learning Boundaries as a Fixer. It's written by Mary Robinson, and it says, I can't really remember how young I was when I learned how to be the fixer in my family. I would imagine it happened around the time my brother was born. My mother had emergency gallbladder surgery not long after his birth. My family has always reminisced about what a good big sister I was because I helped with whatever my mom needed. She wasn't supposed to lift much, but I would hold him up for her nursing or changing since she couldn't lean down easily. I was 3 years old. I felt great pride hearing that story growing up. I was helpful. I was valuable. However, now I see that story different. I shouldn't have had that kind of responsibility at 3 years old. I wonder if I was born with that feeling of responsibility or if it was something I learned. Regardless, I knew that at an early age that it was my job to make the people around me happy. I should lessen their frustration and pain. I knew in my bones that I was the glue. I protected my brother. Mediated fights or put myself in the firing range. I thought about moving away after college, but it didn't feel like I could leave them behind. A fixer thinks or feels that they can prevent other people from experiencing pain or discomfort. They feel they can change things or people for the better. Often, a fixer is a kind, compassionate soul who wants to help. It starts with the best of intentions, but the fixer mentality can veer into muddy water quickly. Fixing becomes dangerous when it is tied to value and lovability. She's making so much sense. Usually, the fixer cannot do anything to change the situation or the person in question, and they end up harming themselves or the relationship in the process. Fixing didn't just extend to my family. I was a fixer for some of my friends, coworkers, and bosses, really anyone in my life. I tried to fix things because I knew deep down I wasn't worthy of love, or so I thought at the time. Being the glue gave people a reason to love me and keep me around. It also gave me something to focus on and distract myself from my own pain. Man, preach, girl. Sometimes people ask me to fix things, but often I took it upon myself to step in. In hindsight, being a fixer offered me a sense of control that I didn't have otherwise. It was an illusion, but it brought me a sense of purpose. One of the main pitfalls of being a fixer is that you have no time or energy to do what is best for you. As a fixer, it is also difficult to say no or even recognize your own needs. The fixer ends up emotionally, mentally, and physically exhausted trying to save the world. I had major health issues over 15 years, the inevitable result of a depleted body that had gone ignored for far too long. I experienced insomnia, anxiety, illness, and multiple surgeries. Did the people around me have perfect lives? Definitely not. In the end, all my efforts didn't change anything. Did I help them feel better or less stressed? Probably to some extent, but the reality is that life is hard for everyone and there's always another hurdle around the next corner. The fixer cannot keep up and the job will never be complete. I have learned that I cannot change other people or their lives, even if I want to. I cannot be all things to all people and survive. I'm also doing the people in my life a great disservice by asserting myself into their affairs. It denies them the opportunity to learn and grow. Not only is no one happy all the time, but people, including our loved ones, need to learn on their own to develop skills for coping well with life's inevitable ups and downs. Just like I've been telling you guys. I had to learn how to put boundaries in place and keep them there, regardless of the guilt I experienced from abandoning my job as a fixer. I continued to want the best for the people I love, but I had to constantly remind myself that I couldn't do their work for them anymore. Fixers need to learn that you can love and be happy for others without being enmeshed in all the details of their lives. There is freedom in acknowledging that you can't fix anything anyway. You can still be helpful and supportive. You can be compassionate, kind, and empathetic. Compassion is not a relationship between the healer and the wounded. It is a relationship between equals. It's hard to say, I love you and I want what's best for you, but I can't do your work. It feels terrible and you want to immediately take it back and fix again. But it gets easier with practice. Boundaries can feel distressing as a fixer, but they exemplify the self-care required to recover. Healthy caregivers take care of themselves first, so they have the energy to be there for others. Self-care looks different for everyone, but it is worth it to find out what works for you. There is hope for the fixer, but it is a challenging adjustment. It is difficult to undo patterns and dynamics in relationships. It is hard work to step out of a role you've played your entire life. When you change, people will either rise to meet you in a new healthy place or they will stay put. You can't control what happens. You can only meet and love people where they are. So this portion is just talking about what an empath is. I never really quite understood this. And people are like, you know, they just kind of use it flippantly. Oh, I'm such an empath. And when I did some more research about it, I was like, yep, totally. So this really cool, like sort of quick description of what an empath is was written by Judith Orloff. And she says, the trademark of an empath is that they feel and absorb other people's emotions and or physical symptoms because of their high sensitivities. They filter the world through their intuition and have a difficult time intellectualizing their feelings. I know the challenges of being a highly sensitive person. When overwhelmed with the impact of stressful emotions, empaths can have panic attacks, depression, chronic fatigue, food, sex, and drug binges, and many physical symptoms that defy traditional medical diagnoses. But an empath doesn't have to feel too much and be overloaded once they learn how to center themselves. The first step is to acknowledge that you are an empath. Here are the 10 traits of an empath. Trait number one, empaths are highly sensitive. They are naturally giving, spiritually open, and good listeners. If you want heart, empaths have got it. Through thick and thin, they're there for you, world-class nurturers. But they can easily have their feelings hurt. Empaths are often told that they are too sensitive and need to toughen up. Shit. All day. Although people do think I'm super tough. So I don't know. I'm like waffling with that one. So number two is empaths are highly attuned to other people's moods, good or bad. They feel everything, sometimes to an extreme. They take on negativity such as anger or anxiety, which is exhausting. Yep. And if they're around peace and love, their bodies take these on and flourish. So let that soak in. Number three, empaths become overwhelmed in crowds. Yeah, here. which can amplify their empathy. They tend to be introverted and prefer one. I definitely am like this. I tend to be introverted and prefer one-on-one contact or small groups. I can speak to a giant room of people, but when it comes to like having these like intense conversations or hear, listening to people, I need to have one-on-one contact or small groups. Even if the empath is more extroverted, they prefer limiting how much time they can spend in a crowd or at a party. This girl is talking to me. This is number four. Empaths experience the world through their intuition. It is important for them to develop their intuition and listen to their gut feelings about people. This will help empaths find positive relationships and avoid energy vampires. Oy, totally. Number five. As super responders, being around people can drain an empath, so they periodically need alone time to recharge their batteries. I know I do. Even a brief escape prevents emotional overload. Empaths like to take their own cars when they go places so they can leave when they please. Oh my God, how many of you that are friends with me can relate to this? Oh, do you want to ride with us? Nope. Going by myself. Number six, too much togetherness can be difficult for an empath, so they may avoid intimate relationships. What? Deep down, they're afraid of being engulfed and losing their identity. For empaths to be at ease in a relationship, the traditional paradigm for being a couple must be redefined. Whoop, totally. Number seven, an empath's sensitivity makes them particularly easy marks for energy vampires, whose fear or rage can sap their energy and peace of mind. Vampires do more than drain an empath's physical energy. The especially dangerous ones, such as narcissists, who lack empathy and are only concerned with themselves, can make them believe they're unworthy and unlovable. There's also a whole thing about gaslighting that I'll talk about some other time, but look that up. Other vampires include the victim, the chronic talker, the drama queen, and other ones. Okay, so number eight. The busyness of everyday life can be too much for an empath. That is for sure. The natural world nourishes and restores them. It helps them to release their burdens, and they take refuge in the presence of green wild things, the ocean, or other bodies of water. That is true. Number nine, an empath's nerves can get frayed by noise, smells, or excessive talking. Sometimes my own. Number 10, empaths are big-hearted people and try to relieve the pain of others. A homeless person holding a cardboard sign that says, I'm hungry at a busy intersection. I am so, like, this is so me. A hurt child, a distraught friend, it's natural to want to reach out to them and ease their pain, but empaths don't stop there. Instead, they take it on. Suddenly, they're the ones feeling drained or upset when they felt fine before. As an empath, I use many strategies to protect my sensitivities, such as fierce time management, setting limits and boundaries with draining people, meditation to calm and center myself, and going out into nature. Being an empath is a gift in my life, but I had to learn to take care of myself. Empaths have special needs. It's important to honor yours and communicate them to loved ones. So I've wanted to do something a little bit different. And, you know, I've read other people's writing in some of my other episodes. But one of my very favorite things to do is voiceover work. And again, it's good to have a voice for radio. And I've been trying to break into the Audible world for a long time. So who knows, maybe you'll buy a book soon with my silky voice narrating. So because this episode is about relationships and love and navigating the world of relationships and love when you have mental illness and what that means, I found quite a few like articles and excerpts that I couldn't have said better. And so this particular one I found is on the Elephant Journal. I'm a big fan of that. I have changed it a little bit because it was in the first person saying, you know, I think this and I think and me. And what I want to do is talk in such a way that we're all together in this, right? That when I talk about this stuff that happens to me and that I'm going through, that you really can commiserate essentially with what I'm saying. And so I'm going to read this kind of essay and, you know, hopefully it speaks to you and that you enjoy it. And so this first part is kind of a, just an excerpt, and it's an unknown author, but it goes like this. She's a special kind of woman. She's the one with the ability to be that rock and that foundation. She's the woman who will sacrifice for your happiness, support your every dream, and be your biggest fan. She's the one that will inspire you, motivate you, and challenge you to become a better person in every aspect of your life. She's the woman who will fight to make things work and never take the easy way out. She's a special kind of woman. She's loyal. She's intelligent. She's passionate about life. She has a soul. She has substance. She has a heart of gold. And she knows how to love unconditionally. She's a special kind of woman. And she's entirely too special to be with anything less than a king. You suppose it isn't love, but rather reciprocal love. Or at the very least, the kind of love that would make someone want to do anything to be with you. The feeling that two people get that inspires them to move mountains to make their love as real as the sunrise. Maybe our problem is that we just think love is supposed to be magical, not logical. Your soul craves electricity, sparks, poetry, and the way the kiss from a soulmate can make the world disappear. Yet as much as you crave this, as much as you give this love to others, it's never given back to you. You are never the one who sits across from someone while they hold your hands telling you, "Baby, there isn't anything in the world that I wouldn't do to make this work because you are the only thing I know for certain." But you're tired of lying to yourself, and you're tired of pretending that friendship is the only possibility. And you're even more tired of believing in love and having faith that one day you won't be putting yourself to bed alone each evening. You're finally realizing that, just maybe, you're never going to be loved in the way that you need to be. Maybe it's your destiny to be alone. Maybe it's your lot to give but never fully receive. You suppose it's your fault in some ways, because you always see the light even in the darkness. You never focus on the reasons why it won't work, but only the reasons why it would. You don't look at how difficult it would be, but how worth it would be. You don't spend a minute thinking about how a love would affect others, because you know that when you find a love that feels like home, you hang on to it. You've always been a romantic, someone who loves the dramatic climax in movies when all seems lost, but then love wins. The kind of person who wants someone to drive hours just to feel your lips against theirs, or to get woken up in the middle of the night just because they couldn't wait until sunrise to see you. Maybe it's not even love you're after, but just being so special to someone that they would do anything to not only get you, but keep you. Yet, even with all of this, you refuse to change. You won't budge even an inch because you are unable to accept anything less than the kind of love that spins your world around and lands you in another dimension. A love that kisses you like Sunday morning, and has you on your knees praying in gratitude that your souls were brought together in this lifetime. You don't want a regular love. You don't want others to approve of you simply because you have things in common or because they would be a good addition to your family. You don't want a partner to say, "We make sense." What you want is the partner who tells you that you drive them crazy, that you kill them slowly with your love and realness. You want a partner who breathes you in and refuses to go through life with anyone else by their side. You want a partner to struggle with the idea of you and feel that no matter what they do, they just can't get you out of their heart. Really, what you're after is a partner who will fight for you, for the two of you, in the same ways that you would for them. Someone who not only tells you that you're worth it, but shows you with their actions. Even with your heart draped in bittersweet love, you still don't think you're asking for too much. You don't think it's crazy to feel that sometimes love does grow in the most unlikely of places, and that when that happens, instead of running away, you have to plant your feet firmly on the ground and remain determined to protect something so special. You don't know what tomorrow will bring. You don't know if perhaps one day there will be a partner who throws caution to the wind just to be the one who wakes up to your starry eyes in the morning. You don't know if you will ever be loved in the ways you need to be. Maybe you're just not cut out for love. Maybe you're meant to walk this life alone, giving out unconditional love as gifts to those you cross paths with. Perhaps it's only in your loneliness that you are able to love like you do, because when it's undiluted and pure, it becomes an unstoppable force. And you don't really believe that, because you know you are not wrong for what you feel and what you want, because you've learned that in love, you only get the amazing stuff if you actually believe it exists. And as for me, I'd rather spend my days alone, believing in this messy, imperfect, difficult, beautiful vision of love, than settling for the bland taste of companionship without passion. Okay, so thank you for sticking around and listening this long. This has been a challenging one for me. And I think there was a couple of times I had to actually stop recording because I needed to cry a little bit, which is something that is happening again. So I hope that you got something out of this. I hope that you can send me all of your healing and recovery energy, and just, I just need to feel the love, that's for sure. And please, please know that that's what I'm trying to do with this as well, is send you all of my love. So until the next time, I hope that you take care of yourselves and each other.